Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levin.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, former congressional counsel for the Democrats. And I have with me tonight a Republican, the head of Intelligence Strategies. It's his job to provide strategies to Republicans and my job to stop him. His name is Mike Lane. And Mike and I will be debating the issues of the week. We want to encourage you to call in as well. Mike, I have in my hands a document that you may have heard of, you may have seen before, but as a Republican, I know you detest. And it is, of course, the Constitution of the United States. Now, mine is a well-worn copy, and it's obvious the things we've discussed before that I know Republicans hate. They hate the ban on torture that's in the Constitution. They hate the ban on searching people's property without a reason that's in the Fourth Amendment. They want people to be held in prison without attorneys because then, after all, if they have attorneys, they might actually be innocent and get off. We've discussed all this. Those are obvious ones.
Actually, Mark, what we believe is that the Constitution applies to Americans or people on American soil. But certainly, you know, you can't be over in the Middle East and claim that the American Constitution, you know, protects you. But go ahead. Let's, for the sake of argument, pursue your line of thing here.
Where some American citizens are concerned, a certain Jose Padilla, it doesn't matter even if they were in Chicago.
Jose Padilla went to trial.
Yes, only after 5 years of being held without trial under your administration. But I want to talk about other provisions that people may not realize that your party hates in our Constitution.
Do tell.
And the most important, I think, because it's the right from which all are derived, is the right to vote. The other one, of course, that y'all hate is a free press. Now, we'll get to the free press in a minute and how the administration and the Pentagon are again providing propaganda counselors, much in the tradition of the old Soviet Union, on our airways. We'll get to that. But I want to start with the right to vote, because as the Supreme Court has said in the past, back when we had a Supreme Court that actually functioned as a way to protect people's rights, it is the right from which all others are derived. If you don't have the right to vote, then if you don't like a policy that the government is doing, you can't change it. In effect, you're living with tyranny. Now, the state of Indiana does not want its poor citizens to vote because poor citizens vote for Democrats. So the state of Indiana passed a law with its Republican legislature and its Republican governor disenfranchising what the state admits, at least 43,000 Indianans, according to Justice Souter's dissenting opinion in today's Supreme Court decision, it could be up to 500,000. But basically, you take all the Indiana citizens who don't have driver's licenses and you make it very, very difficult for them to vote. Today, to its shame and discredit, the United States Supreme Court upheld this Indiana law, despite the fact that they couldn't find a single case where anyone had ever committed fraud of the way that your Republican legislature wanted to stop it. You can't tell me, Mike, that you support the Indiana ID law, do you?
Mark, you know, let's analyze this decision for just a second, okay? First of all, this was not, you know, any alleged Republican appointees to the court. This was a solid 6-3 decision, with the decision being written by Justice Stevens, hardly a right-wing justice. Justice Stevens is so far to the left that perhaps the only one further left than him is Justice Ginsburg on the court. And he wrote the decision saying that it is a reasonable effort. It is within the reasonable interest of government to make sure that elections are free and fair and honest. And if you can't make sure that elections are honest, then they're not worth anything. Justice Stevens got this one right, one of the few ones he has in the last 20 years.
Well, now, Justice Stevens is nothing if not a canny justice. He knew that five justices of the Supreme Court, that would be all the typical ones that we might expect. We have, of course, Scalia and Thomas and Kennedy, the three who put George Bush in power, and then two justices who owe their jobs to the very fact that Justice Thomas, Scalia, and Kennedy overruled the American people in 2000, threw away legitimate votes, and forced in the presidency. After all, if those justices hadn't thrown away legitimate American votes and refused to count those votes in Florida, Alito and Roberts wouldn't have the jobs they had today. Those five were expected to vote the wrong way. Justice Stevens, being the canny justice that he is, understood that as an elderly man, justice on the court, the longest-serving justice on the court.
The senior guy.
The senior guy. He gets to write the opinions if he's on the winning side. So once he saw that 5-4 were going against him, I have no doubt Justice Stevens switched his vote so he could write the opinion to make sure that further damage wasn't done. Scalia and Thomas and Alito wanted to go much further. But
They wrote concurring opinions, but the main opinion was signed on by Kennedy and by Justice Roberts, and Justice Stevens was very strong in saying that the state has a compelling interest in ensuring that elections are honest and credible.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because I agree the state has a compelling interest in making sure that elections are honest and credible. The state of Indiana admitted that at least 43,000 Indianans would lose their right to vote under this law. Now, the state, in Justice Souter's opinion, they note that 12% of Americans across the country don't have driver's licenses, 6 to 10% don't have voter IDs, and as Justice Souter points out, Indiana had no showing that it was any different from the average American state. Mm-hmm. So Indiana likely is disenfranchising 500,000 and not a mere 43,000. But the state admitted to 43,000, which is 1% of the Indiana population. 43,000 people immediately lose their right to vote. Now, how many cases of fraud where someone voted in person, committed fraud, the kind of thing this photo ID is designed to prevent, how many have been shown throughout all of Indiana's voting history? Is it 43,000?
Okay.
Do you know the number?
Because
I'll give you a hint. It's not 40,000. It's not 4,000. It's not 400. It's not 40. It's not 4. There's never been a single case in all of Indiana history where this fraud has been committed.
Okay. What Justice Stevens wrote in his opinion was that this is not an unreasonable restriction given all the difficulties that are placed in front of people to vote, as in, oh, yes, you do have to be a registered voter to get there and vote. You just can't show up and say, okay, I'm here to vote. Given the plethora of things that you need to do to be a legally registered voter, requiring you to have a photo ID is not an unreasonable restriction on voting. That's what Justice Stevens wrote. The second thing that we need to look at what he wrote on this was that he noted that the state of Indiana is not disenfranchising any particular class because in the poor, he did note in his opinion that the state gives away free IDs to anybody who wants one, okay? You don't have to have a driver's license. If you want a free ID from the state,
what do you have to do to get a free ID?
They'll give it to you.
Will they come to your house and take your picture,
Mark? But they won't come to your house and register you either, Mark. You need to go to the courthouse and register.
No. You don't have to go to the courthouse. You can go to your local post office. And you know what? There's post offices in every American city and every zip code. What do you have to do? You know what you have to do. What do you have to do to get to get this free photo ID? You can tell me. You go to the DMV. You go to the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Right.
All right. In your county, wherever that is. Now, if you have a car, it's very easy to get to Departments of Motor Vehicles. They are designed to be next to major highways, places where you can drive easily to get them because, after all, they're designed for drivers. But Indiana didn't let you get your photo ID at the post office where you can get things like passport pictures. They didn't let you get your photo ID at the ballot box where there's precincts available to everyone. That you can't get it where you get your government check or your disability. No, you have to go to a place where if you have a car, you don't need one. And if you don't have a car, they want you to stand in line for several hours at the DMV at a place that's inaccessible to you without a car.
You know what, Mark? Most places, and I can't say this about Indiana because I don't know the exact laws. Most places, when you register to vote, you need to show a photo ID as you register. And if you don't have a photo ID when you register because you're registering at a post office or you send in a mail registration or something like that, they require, even states that are not like Indiana that require a photo ID each time, they require you to have a photo ID the very first time you cast your ballot. So this is not new, it is not unusual, it is not onerous, it is well within the scope of what is usually required of voters who are casting their ballot in American elections. It is necessary to ensure the honesty and the integrity of the American ballot, and if a Democratic Party thinks that we don't have any interest, particularly a compelling interest, in ensuring honesty and integrity in our elections, then I don't know what you guys stand for.
Okay, so how many cases of in-person voting fraud have ever been shown in
Indiana? Why should we wait for fraud before we address the problem?
I'll give you an example. We have found fraud. Again, in the Supreme Court opinion, there was fraud in Indiana. I'll tell you where it was. On absentee ballots. It has been shown, there have been documented cases in Indiana where people committed voting fraud on absentee ballots. Guess what? The state of Indiana is not requiring a photo ID for absentee ballots. Why? Who uses absentee ballots? Rich people who travel a lot, people in the military who the people in Indiana think will vote Republican. They can commit fraud all they like. But poor people, including, by the way, people who sign in, give their signature, a signature that might match 25 years of voting record signatures. They go in, they sign in, the little lady in her precinct where she's gone every year of her life to vote. Her vote is not counted unless she somehow gets to the county seat within 10 days out of there. I don't know how she's going to get there. She doesn't have a car. She doesn't have a driver's license.
She can ask a friend for a ride, Mark.
Okay,
or she can take a bus.
Here's an idea. Here's an idea. Why not provide those affidavits when she votes? She votes provisionally.
They do have affidavits. She does have an affidavit.
Not in Indiana. Won't work in Indiana.
Yes, it will.
Indiana won't let you vote.
What they absolutely do let her vote. She votes, and as you point out, she has she has 10 days to provide this positive proof of whom she is to the registrar of voters to show that her
county clerk could be 100 miles away.
Registrar of voters, county clerk, whatever. Okay.
Well, it's not whatever. This isn't like a precinct. Most people have precincts in our neighborhoods.
Okay, Mark.
This is a person too poor to own a driver's license.
All right, Mark, we have...
If the state of Indiana wanted to prevent fraud, why not do this? Why not take their pictures at the voting places? They come in to vote. They don't have a photo ID. You take their pictures. They sign who they are. Boom, you have prevention of fraud. And you allow people to vote.
How do you have prevention of fraud? You're giving them an ID based on them just saying who they are. That's not prevention
of
fraud.
Make it provisional until you check it out.
Mark,
that's fine by me.
We have 20 million illegal aliens in this country, any one of whom under your scenario can walk up to the polls on election day, say, give me a ballot, take my picture, here's my vote. What are you doing to stop that?
I'll tell you what I'm doing to stop that.
I'll
tell
you
what
I'm doing to stop that. Your plan is an invitation to massive fraud.
I'll tell
you what I'm doing. Not minor fraud, massive fraud.
I'll tell you what I'm doing to stop that. Okay?
I'm listening.
Very simple.
I'm listening.
Someone does that, they're not on the voter rolls, okay? First of all, they had to be registered to vote, right?
Okay.
But even if they weren't on the voter rolls, I would still let them vote.
No, they registered to vote, and they walk in and they say, my name's Mark Levine. Take my picture, and here's my ballot.
They take my picture, they get my signature, they give me a ballot provisionally.
Not you. Some guy over there.
Some guy over there.
Who's an illegal alien.
Okay? They go in. They take his picture, they get his signature, and they do it provisionally because they're not sure he's me, all right? Then they go and they check it out. They find out that he's illegal. One, they don't count the
vote. How are they going to find this out? There's no provision for finding that out.
I go in and vote.
Oh, you can tell
by... They know me.
Mark, I'm shocked that you can tell based on the way somebody looks that they're illegal.
No, this is not the Democratic line, Mark. You're telling me this illegal alien...
You just told me you can tell that they look illegal. What's with this?
You're telling me they're going under my registration, right?
Right.
Okay, if they go under my registration, and then I pop in an hour later...
But you don't pop in. You're out of town. You didn't vote absentee.
Oh,
you're gone.
So this illegal alien has this scheme. Now, let me get this straight.
No, it's not the illegal alien.
No, let's get this scheme.
It's the Democratic Party that has this scheme.
No, let's get this scheme.
No, it's the Democratic Party that has the scheme.
He's watching me all day long.
Nope.
He knows I'm not voting.
The Democratic Party knows that you're out of town, and they have somebody come in to cast your ballot for you. That's what I'm telling you.
This illegal alien is going to risk 5 years felony to increase his candidate's vote by one. And in return for that real possibility, you're willing to throw away the votes of 43,000 legitimate candidates.
Usually it's massive fraud. It's not individual fraud.
Let's
talk about fraud. It's organized.
We'll get to organized fraud after the break. If you want to join in this discussion, we encourage you to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Call in. You can tell me I'm wrong. You can tell Mike he's wrong. You can tell us we're both wrong. We want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? How long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone? And in the process, maybe learn something yourself. Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not your helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm here debating Republican Mike Lane on the very important question of people's right to vote. Democrats usually stand up for people's right to vote. Republicans, I would argue, do not. And my evidence, well, it's today's United States Supreme Court decision upholding an Indiana law that says that you have to have a photo ID, and not just any photo ID, but a government-issued driver's license. And hey, if you don't drive, you can't vote. They make it virtually impossible. You have to go down to the DMV, give up your job, stand in line for several hours. It's not like they're going from house to house taking your picture. I want to read to you, Mike, from the 24th Amendment to the Constitution. As I said, I think Republicans hate virtually every part of the Constitution. Let me read to you the 24th Amendment. The 24th Amendment, which was ratified in January of 1964, says the right of citizens of the United States to vote in the election, and it gives the various elections, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax. Indiana has required people to get this ID. Now, they say it's free at the DMV, but to get it, you have to have a birth certificate. Cost of a birth certificate, $12 in some Indiana counties. Now, here's what's interesting. In 1966, the Supreme Court struck down a Virginia law requiring a poll tax of $1.50 in 1966. $1.50 inflation-adjusted today is less than $10. Indiana requires you to pay $12. So I guess it's clear now, the 24th Amendment is hereby repealed.
Well, Mark, I don't know what kind of documents you have in your safe deposit box, but I have a copy of my birth certificate, as I believe, you know, most people have a copy in
their... Oh, I do. I do, but I'm not homeless, Mike. How many homeless people do you know that have safe deposit boxes? Because I don't know any of them. Every homeless person I know doesn't happen to have a safe deposit box with a birth certificate in it, but I guess they're not really Americans. They can't vote.
You know what? If you can show me any statistics that there is a particular group of people, and the Democratic Party alleged three groups. They alleged older people, they alleged minorities, and they alleged the poor.
And disabled.
All less likely to have an ID that would be acceptable than any other group.
That's right.
Where is it written that the poor don't have... Where is it written that minorities are less likely to have an ID than anybody else?
Well, I'll
where
tell
is
you
it written that older people are less likely to have, sometime over the course of their life, acquired an ID less than somebody else?
There was
no evidence presented to the court that any group was disparately hit by this thing. Justice Stevens wrote that there was no evidence at all that there was a particular burden placed on any single group.
I happen to have the Supreme Court opinion right here, and I happen to cite, footnote 28 of Justice Souter's dissent.
Oh.
And in footnote, oh, excuse me, 25.
So now we're talking about the minority opinion here.
In footnote 25 of Justice Souter's dissent, he cites a study on voter identification from the Michigan Law Review. In 1994, the U.S. Department of Justice found that African Americans in Louisiana were 4 to 5 times less likely than white residents to have government-sanctioned photo identification. He also cites another study in Milwaukee to show that blacks have less IDs than whites. Let me suggest to you that that's not necessarily a racial thing, but a poverty thing. Blacks are more likely to be poor than whites, and poor people are less likely to have IDs. And you know why? Because if you're middle class, you probably have a home, or you at least rent a home. You have a more stable existence. But we have people living on the edge. And the 12% of Americans that don't have driver's licenses, let me suggest to you, a large portion of them probably don't have birth certificates either.
All right. How do they get their jobs? How do they pay their taxes?
Some of them have jobs, some don't.
Don't they have to show a Social Security
card?
Should
you have to have a job in order to vote?
No, but you have to have a Social Security card in order to have a...
Not to vote.
In order to have a job, and you need to have an ID card to get a Social Security card. So, I mean...
But Social Security cards aren't sufficient.
Mark.
Listen, if they accepted Social Security cards, this might not be as big a problem. They don't. They require this photo ID that you get at the DMV after you pay to get your birth certificate. I mean, that is a poll tax. At the very
except
least.
Except for the fact.
Shouldn't Indiana go to your house when they do the census, take your picture, provide you the voter ID?
No, they shouldn't. Mark, one of the things that Republicans like to take as gospel of the way people should live their life is to take responsibility for some of the things that you think you should be doing. If you think you should be doing going to the polls and exercising your right to vote on Election Day, which is something I encourage everybody universally to do, then you should take perhaps some responsibility and exercise just a little bit of effort to get that identification card to ensure that we have fair, honest, and integrity-driven elections rather than elections that are open to the possibility of massive fraud.
And so it's no big deal to make you pay just a little something in order to vote, right?
No, you're not paying to vote.
I just think you hate the 24th Amendment.
You're not paying to vote. What you're doing is you're getting a free identification card
that
from the government.
That you have to get by buying either a passport, which costs money, or a birth certificate, which costs money, or any of the other forms of ID, which costs money. Social Security card doesn't cut it. It had to be military ID, passport, or birth certificate. So you got to buy this from the government. At the very least, the government
should
provide
this for free. You don't have to buy that at all.
Oh, so you just join the military.
I have one in my pocket. It was issued to me free of charge. I've had it there.
And if you're 93 and disabled, you should still join the military just so you can vote, right?
How many picture forms of ID do you have in your pocket right now?
My driver's license.
I have.
It's the only one.
I have my driver's license and my military ID.
There may be one on a credit card, I'm not sure. But honestly, the only one that's government issued right now in my pocket is my driver's license. It's the only one I have.
Okay.
And if I lose my driver's license, and I'm in Indiana, and it's my day to vote, I lose my right to vote.
No.
I completely lose my right to vote.
No, you don't, because
do.
You can vote, and then as long as you prove
who you are
within 10
that's
days,
not true.
You've got it.
I have to, the Indiana law, if I lose
Come
my
on,
driver's
license,
no, let me
you
finish.
Can do it. Okay.
If I lose my driver's license, and I'm an Indiana citizen,
right.
That morning, or it's stolen, I go to vote, I don't have it, I can't vote. Now, I can go to the county seat 10 days later and swear that I am too poor to afford a driver's license. I can't swear to that. I'm not going to commit perjury. I'm not too poor to afford a driver's license. If people lose their driver's licenses on that day, they lose their right to vote.
No, they don't.
Oh, well, Indiana.
Why don't you just get a new driver's license? Wouldn't that be easy?
If I lose it on Election Day, what am I supposed to do?
Get it the day after. You have 10 days to do
produce it. The 10 days rule, I can show you the Indiana statute. I have to swear that I'm too indigent to afford a driver's license. What Indiana is saying is if I lose my driver's license, oh well, I guess I can't vote. And all this goal is to prevent some kind of fraud that no one has ever documented has ever occurred in Indiana history. If the goal is to prevent fraud, Mike, why not allow people to vote provisionally, as happens in Virginia, in Florida, in states that have Republican legislatures like Georgia? You vote provisionally, and then they prove you are who you say you are. And if you're not, you lose your right to vote, and by all means, put yourself in jail for a felony. I have no problem with that.
Mark, you seem to be hung up on this concept of, we don't have any evidence that there is, massive fraud or even zero fraud going on.
None.
Let me ask you this. Should we sit around and wait for the 100th murder to be committed before we pass a law against murder? Or can we pass a law against murder before the first murder is committed?
Well, look,
or perhaps we should
I'm
wait
sure,
for the 1,000th murder to be
I'm
committed.
I'm sure if we take 43,000 people off the street randomly in Washington, D.C. or in Virginia, then there may be less murders committed. Maybe that justifies rounding up innocent people and putting them in jail.
That's not what I'm advocating.
No, what you're advocating is disenfranchising 43,000 people, taking away their right to vote, because maybe someday, somewhere, there'll be fraud.
What I'm advocating is that they take responsibility for their own actions. They know
what
right
if they
now.
They can't afford
they
it
know
because
right
they're too
now,
poor or
they,
too disabled.
They know right now that we are a good 8 months away from the election. They have 8 months to acquire this particular piece of identification before Election Day. They can do it, Mark. If they can't get an ID within 8 months than they are not taking responsibility for their own actions.
You know,
that's what I want them to do.
Some people in this country are struggling to eat.
Right.
Some people in this country are struggling to find a home.
Right.
Some people can't afford, you know.
Mark, it's a free ID from the state. It's free.
You have to get a birth certificate to get it. And that costs $3 to $12 in Indiana County.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. Every single person that you can find that for some reason or another can't afford legitimately a $12 birth certificate, I will use my influence. I'll get the Republican Party of Indiana to pay for their birth certificate.
Well, I appreciate that, but here's another option. Okay, instead of having these things...
Don't give me another option. I've just solved it for you.
You haven't solved
it. We solved it.
That doesn't solve the problem because there's a transportation issue.
We will pay
the
fee.
Will the Republican Party of Indiana give a ride to any voter who wants to get to the DMV but has no ride there? Now, if you really want it...
No, but the Democratic Party will if they're Democrats, and the Republican Party will if they're Republicans. Parties do it all the time. It's a routine election day or pre-election day thing. Absolutely.
It's going to have to be pre-election day.
It can be pre-election day. You know what? I've run local parties. I've run local elections starting 14 days out when there's absentee in-person voting. You routinely provide rides for anybody who can't get to the single place, the county courthouse, which is where you have your pre-voting in person, absentee in person is what it's called. We routinely provide rides to those people.
And if hundreds of people show up at the DMV, and that makes sure that drivers that day can't get their driver's license, you are willing to take all the DMV employees saying, sorry, no driver's licenses this week. We're only issuing voter IDs because that's more important than driving. Are you willing to do that?
No,
I'm willing to do that.
I think the state has a compelling interest in providing extra personnel in the wave just before Election Day. Whatever the cutoff is, if you need the ID 30 days before or one day before or whatever it is, when you know you're going to have a bow wave for 2 weeks beforehand, you hire seasonal help and you make sure that you have the people
there. Let's
get
a concession here that I know you know is true, but you may not say on air. The entire purpose of this legislation is to keep people who Republicans think will vote Democratic, namely poor people, African Americans, elderly and disabled people, people who benefit from Democrats in power, to encourage them and to keep them from voting.
Mark, you just gave me an example that if I was to lose my driver's license the morning of the election and I went there and I was not willing to swear that I, you know, couldn't afford one, et cetera, that I would be disenfranchised.
Right.
I'm not a poor little indigent little Democrat, okay?
That's,
so no.
You're one of the ones thrown into the mix.
You know what
but
we have here?
But that's not where most of them
You know what
are.
We have here? We have a law whose purpose is to guarantee the integrity and security of American elections. The state has a compelling interest to do so. The Supreme Court got it right.
Indiana has existed for 180 years. How come there's never been a single recorded example
We've not had the extent of illegal immigration in this country
Actually, we have now. I'll tell you what.
Not to the extent. We've never had 20 million identifiable illegal immigrants in our country under the current circumstances before.
And you'd think there'd be one illegal alien somewhere in the country that'd be caught doing this if
and
it were
are.
A severe enough problem to throw out 43,000 legitimate voters. I want to hear from you. Join in the discussion. Tell us who you agree with. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back.
Serves a sentence with you.
I'm Bob Costas, and I've been broadcasting sports for a long time. Much of what I do is ad-libbed, but still, one of the most important aspects of my job is being able to write. Narrations, essays, commentaries. It's essential to express those thoughts and concepts clearly and concisely. Good writing is essential for almost any career. And with today's advanced technology, the National Commission on Writing reports that the need to write well has never been more important. Writing is everybody's business.
Sure, my neighbors Gene and Louise, they may be superheroes with superpowers, but that doesn't make them so super at saving energy and money.
Honey!
I may not be able to harness the power of the elements, but I save significant cash and help the environment with appliances, electronics, and windows featuring the Energy Star label. So discover your own energy-saving superpowers. Go to ase.org/consumers.
Okay.
Mom, Dad's making fun of you again.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating with Republican Mike Lane the issues of the day. And there are a number of issues this week. We talked about the Supreme Court decision today affirming Indiana's law, which keeps 43,000 Indianans from voting. But we'll move on to other topics. Another provision of the Constitution that seems that Republicans don't like. They really hate this document, folks. And that is the First Amendment, the one that guarantees a free press. It's come out that the government, again, is sending stealth propaganda operatives into our newsrooms. Now, they were caught paying off reporters like Maggie Gallagher and Armstrong Williams to write op-eds for their case. Now it's known that more than 100, quote, military analysts, quote, unquote.
I believe the actual figure that the New York Times quoted was 150, right?
150, that's right. 150 so-called military analysts were instructed by the Pentagon as to what to say, and the long article describes how they would ask the Pentagon, you want me to say this or you want me to say that, and they would go on and they would pretend to be independent analysts while the Pentagon considered them media force multipliers. In other words, specific propaganda artists. Now, back when the Soviet Union existed, they had their propaganda. It was called TASS, but at least the Soviet citizens knew that TASS was a manufactured arm of the government. I guess the Soviet Union was freer than Republican rule because we didn't know until today that you had snuck all these propaganda artists on the air.
Well, you know, first of all, Mark, you got this article out of the New York Times, which you couldn't find a less credible organization than the New York Times.
They don't deny it. They're quoted in the newspaper, analysts.
It's the New York Times, Mark. It has no credibility.
It's the paper of record in the United States. But
once upon a time was the paper of record. The New York Times is now the paper. It's the house organ. For MoveOn.org is what it is.
I disagree with the New York Times. I understand they didn't come out against this war early. They were allowing Judith Miller to be used by the Pentagon. I think the New York Times has moved too far to the right.
The New York Times, 2 months ago ran an article that Senator McCain was having a tawdry sexual affair with a Washington lobbyist, which turns out to be, guess what? Poof,
well,
nothing there.
He's definitely in bed with a lot of lobbyists.
They ran an article this morning with an inflamed headline that said he was illegally, you know, avoiding campaign finance, you know, by this private jet. And then they conclude their whole article, the last paragraph says, and of course, despite our extensive analysis, there's absolutely nothing wrong with what Senator McCain has done.
They've written Obama with Jeremiah Wright. They've written on Hillary Clinton.
It has no credibility, but let's go right to your story.
Are you denying the veracity of that article?
No.
You've seen the article.
You know what? The New York Times has no credibility. I've read the article. I don't know if it's true or not.
People were directly quoted.
I don't know if New York Times fabricates quotes, Mark.
Why aren't these? This article's a week old.
Okay.
I haven't seen a single military analyst write in and ask for a correction.
I'll address the issue. I'm just on the record. The New York Times has less than zero credibility. Now, as far as that's concerned, you know, of course the Pentagon is using reporters or analysts, if you will, that they consider to be understanding of their viewpoint and their objective to get their word out. Of course they're doing that. Hello?
Why are they dishonestly going on as military analysts?
Did Reverend Wright just use Bill Moyers to get his story out? You know, I mean, come on.
Is Reverend Wright pretending to be someone else? That's the
problem. No, but Bill Moyers is. Bill Moyers is pretending to be someplace
Everyone
else.
Everyone knows who Bill Moyers is. He served his country under Lyndon Johnson. He's a very patriotic individual, and he's allowing Reverend Wright on his show. Look, you have a whole Fox propaganda network.
Bill Moyers is a guy who took Reverend Wright on for the sole purpose of rehabilitating him. He didn't ask him a single difficult question.
If you want to criticize the interview, fine, but that's not the question here. Reverend Wright was not pretending to be somebody else. Your Pentagon spokespeople were pretending to be somebody else.
Reverend Wright, they're not my analysts.
The Pentagon's analysts.
They work for CNN. They work for MSNBC.
They work for George W. Bush.
They work for MSNBC.
They work for the Pentagon.
Where do their paychecks come from?
They're spies.
Where do their paychecks come from?
They're spies.
They get $1,000, $500 to $1,000 per appearance for appearing on the Clinton News Network, for appearing on MSNBC with Obermeyer, okay,
and
you
they
know,
get, and they
for
get,
appearing
and they
on ABC News, on CBS News
and
with
the
Katie
Pentagon.
Kirk, you know,
they have two bosses.
No, they don't
why
get money from the Pentagon.
Why don't
no.
they admit?
They do not get any money from the Pentagon. They get
the
information
Pentagon
from the Pentagon.
The Pentagon directs their message. Now, why not simply
That's
admit?
That's not money.
Why not simply admit, hi, I'm here. I'm a representative of the Pentagon. The Pentagon has told me they need me for propaganda purposes to come on here. I'm going to tell you things that even I don't believe are true, which they admitted. They said things that they knew or believed weren't true because they knew the Pentagon wanted them to say things. Reverend Wright can say whatever he wants. He represents Reverend Wright. These military analysts, if they represented the Pentagon, should have told the media and the American people up front, and they didn't.
Okay. Let me say you're asking the wrong person. I appreciate your thinking I have the answer to your question. Why don't they do such and such? Talk to CNN, okay?
Talk to the
they're
Pentagon.
The ones,
CNN
they're the
didn't
ones,
know sometimes.
Well, why didn't they? And
they did, because
and,
these were
and
secret
if,
things.
And,
they did.
And if no, come on. Everybody knows that if you're a paid analyst, your sources are giving you briefings. They're giving you information. In fact, they're specifically paid because they get these briefings. That's why CNN was paying them.
But
that's
the
why MSNBC was paying
the Pentagon
them
was
because
directing.
They had access to get these briefings.
There's a difference between getting information and the Pentagon directing what they're saying.
The Pentagon has written memos saying, Mark,
we are going to tell them what to say, and we're going to treat them as media force multipliers, and we're going to pretend they're these unbiased people when actually they're going to go in and spout our line even when it's false.
No one had a key in their back that was wound up and they were sent out there to do it.
Sure, they did. You know what the key was?
What the Pentagon
made sure that they could not get access to the media if they didn't spout the Pentagon line.
What the Pentagon did was they provided them with information and they said, okay, you know, here's your insider briefing, and they gave them insider briefings, you know, at, you know, invitation only. They took some of them actually on trips to places. They took them to Gitmo. They took them to Iraq. They took them every place so they could see firsthand exactly what's going on. And then they said, okay, that's our side of the story, but these guys have an obligation to, you know, to find out what the real story is, you know, per their statuses. I don't even know if they're journalists or not, to be honest with you. Maybe they don't have an obligation to provide the other side of the story. But if I was running the Pentagon, you bet I'd be giving them a press release every hour on the hour.
It's
you know?
Fine for the Pentagon to give these people press releases. What's not fine is the Pentagon saying, you won't get access to us if you don't tell the lie specifically the way we want you to tell it.
Okay.
And not only that, but we will make sure that you never work in this town again.
Well, you know what?
Because we're going to provide you access to CNN. We're going to provide you access to MSNBC, but only if you spout our line. That's not a free press. That's a propaganda press.
That's actually not the case, Mark, because you know what? If I'm working for CNN and I'm making $1,000 an appearance, and I come out there and say, guess what, boss? I'm going to go on the air, and I'm going to say I was told by the Pentagon I would never again have any access.
That's what the article says, and these people have admitted it.
Because I'm not spouting their line. CNN's going to put me on my own show. I'm going to have my own talk show now for $300,000 a year instead of for $1,000 an appearance. And they can't, they, you know, I mean,
That's not what these analysts have said.
This is money in the bank.
The analysts have said that they made clear that they had to spout this particular view or they'd make sure they never got access again. And it's actually very difficult to get access to those shows. The Pentagon actually collaborated with CNN. Yes, I blame CNN. I blame MSNBC. I blame the whole right-wing
CBS,
mainstream media.
You know?
Well, actually, CBS, I wasn't part of it. As I recall, they had their own analysts, and they didn't rely on the Pentagon to do it. But I do think the press is way too cozy with the Pentagon.
And maybe that's why CBS's ratings are the worst there are.
Well, listen, there's no question. There is a right-wing conspiracy to make sure that CBS doesn't get anywhere. No. We can talk about Dan Rather. But the heart of it is...
You have to get over Dan Rather. He's gone.
I love Dan Rather. Right. Well, the heart of it is... And this is a problem with the New York Times, too, with Judith Miller. The press and the government are way too cozy. One of the reasons I do this show, all the news the government does not want you to know, is I believe in an independent press. I believe in a press that doesn't take orders from the government. And to me, whether it's the Fox propaganda channel or Soviet TASS or these news magazines and news channels that say, oh, we'll have a Pentagon spokesman on, but we won't tell the listeners it's a Pentagon spokesman. Pox on all their houses. It's bad of CNN. It's bad of the government. The American people deserve the truth, not some manufactured lie.
I absolutely concur. MSNBC and CNN need to be exposed, and I'll work with you on doing that.
Even though Fox is the worst perpetrator of them all, and made clear that it was the worst perpetrator
Fair
of
Fair and
them
balanced,
all.
Mark. Fair
yeah,
and balanced.
Yeah, the Republican News you know? Network. Let me go to another subject. You saw the interview, or at least part of it, between John McCain and George Stephanopoulos.
From this week on Sunday.
This week on Sunday. And I played for you the clip on John Hagee.
Right.
Now, the press has made mincemeat no question about it, about the relationship between Barack Obama and Pastor Reverend Wright. I mean, there's no question that this has been talked over many, mm-hmm. many times.
And continues to be, because apparently Reverend Wright has decided this is his Tour America, you know,
apparently
week,
so, and I assure you Barack Obama is not happy about that tour.
What
but,
is with him?
But if there's any evidence that you want that Barack Obama is independent of Reverend Wright, there's your evidence right there. Because I assure you that if Obama was in Wright's pocket, Obama would have said to Wright, you stay off the tour.
Have we talked about anything other than goddamn America for the past three, four, 5 days?
Let's talk about someone who also damns America, and his name is Pastor John Hagee. Pastor John Hagee said, in addition to things about the Catholic Church being a whore and a following mm-hmm. up on Hitler, and I could show you some really very damning quotes, in terms of God damning America, he said that Katrina was punishment for the sins of New Orleans. And presumably, if it was God's punishment, then those people there deserve to die. You know, to me, the awful things that Wright said, which I don't condone, God damn America, that pales beyond saying that thousands of people in New Orleans lost their lives for their sins. That, to me, actually is suggesting not just some, oh, God damn America is an awful thing to say, but actually saying that people's deaths, innocent people's deaths, were deserved. That's Pastor John Hagee. Pastor John Hagee, as you know, has not only endorsed John McCain, but John McCain sought out his endorsement. And while he condemns what Hagee has to say, he hasn't condemned the endorsement. He hasn't said, as, for example, Obama said about Farrakhan, I condemned, I reject, I denounce. He won't say that about Hagee.
Well, I don't think Obama has condemned, rejected, and denounced his relationship with Pastor Wright, but
Let's
go on to Hagee. Hagee's an ignorant bigot who ought to be tossed under the bus, okay? John McCain.
You would advocate John McCain saying, I reject his endorsement.
Here's
is that
what.
Right?
Stephanopoulos asked McCain if he wanted to reject that endorsement.
Right.
He said, first of all, McCain said yes. First of all, it was a mistake to solicit and accept the endorsement.
He said it was probably a mistake
to solicit and accept the endorsement.
But
and
he won't reject it now.
Then Stephanopoulos followed up and said, you know, well, do you want to reject it? And he said, no, I guess I'll take any endorsement I can get or something. You know, words to that effect.
What McCain, and he praised Hagee for other things?
No, what McCain missed here was he missed his opportunity for a sister soldier moment.
That's right.
This was his opportunity to toss Hagee under the bus.
I agree.
Cleanse himself of that whole thing.
Uh-oh, I'm agreeing with you.
And look at, and make himself.
One of us must be wrong.
And make himself look really good, and he missed the opportunity. And I hope that someone in his campaign is listening and that he takes the opportunity in the next news cycle to do exactly that, because Hagee needs to go away.
I join with you in condemning John McCain's decision to accept John Hagee's endorsement, and I welcome your agreement with me that John McCain needs to completely reject this bigot and throw him under the bus, and I hope you encourage your fellow Republicans to talk John McCain into doing the right thing, because when it comes to religious bigots, John McCain changes his mind a lot. 8 years ago, he called Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson agents of intolerance. Today, oh, they're just hunky-dory. He's got no problems with them.
You know,
I guess that's what it requires to win your nomination, right? You've got to bow under religious bigots in your party?
We should probably leave Reverend Falwell out of this.
He's dead?
A man who can't defend himself is not fodder for this kind of discussion. We can focus on Hagee.
I have no problem blaspheming the dead.
I have a problem talking about Pat Robertson. You know what? I gave what I thought was a great speech when I was a junior in college and I was taking speech, and I gave what I thought was a great speech, and I got an F on it from my teacher because I blaspheme the dead who are not here to defend themselves.
See, Jerry Falwell.
I remember that lesson.
One of my favorite things about Jerry Falwell, after he accused feminists and pagans and gay people of causing 9/11, is that he went on a national interview and said that God had granted him 10 more years. He died a few months later. I guess God has dissed Jerry Falwell, so I don't have to do that. But when we come back, I want to ask specifically about John McCain's flip-flop on that issue and other issues like taxes in Iraq. We'll be right back with more of The Inside Scoop right after this.
I forgot to throw away my trash after lunch, but then I saw it later when I was playing in the woods. The next week, I went boating with my grandpa, and there it was. I tried to go swimming, but I couldn't because of my trash. And when I went fishing, well, you can guess what I caught that day. So now I always throw away my trash in the garbage can, where it belongs.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit PovertyUSA.org.
Every year, 250,000 Americans are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
My fellow scientists and I are working on treatments and a cure for this deadly disease.
Millions of lives are at stake. Alzheimer's disease affects one in three families.
We're committed to uncovering the mystery of Alzheimer's.
And we're not going to quit until the job is done.
To find out more about Alzheimer's disease, call 1-800-437-2423.
Only through research will a cure be found.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not your helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, and I want to let you know you still have a chance to call in. I want to encourage you to do so. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let us know what you think about anything that Mike or I has to say. You can also call 571-749-1166. Here's your last chance. Join us. Mike, in the interview with John McCain, in addition to John Hagee, George Stephanopoulos asked him some very tough questions on Iraq. And the question he asked him is whether United States troops were being held hostage to decisions from Iraqi leaders. And John McCain says, no, it's not true. But why isn't it true? Isn't it the case that the way John McCain defines success in Iraq, and he also defines it in there, is a stable, free democracy where, the Iraqi people can vote freely and it's a stable place in the Middle East and everyone holds hands and sing kumbaya. Okay, he didn't say the last part.
Yeah, I don't think kumbaya is his tune.
Well, I think it is, because I think he wants nirvana on Iraq. And let me suggest to you, we're not going to get to that nirvana unless the Iraqis cooperate. And a lot of Iraqis don't like each other. It's not just Sunni versus Shia. You've got al-Sadr. You have the government. The government is going after al-Sadr, but when they do that, they can't even get their own government troops to do what they want to do. I think George Stephanopoulos' implicit question is right. U.S. troops are being held hostage to decisions by Iraqis.
No, they're not being held hostage because, of course, we have the ability to cut and run and leave the Iraqi people in the lurch anytime we want to.
I support that.
I know you do.
Within 16 months, as Obama and Clinton have both said.
And cut and run is the wrong way to go, as Senator McCain has so ably articulated.
Right. Look, we need to be there for 100 years, hundreds of trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives.
You and Howard Dean and even Barack Obama mischaracterizing that statement, and we'll get to that after I talk about what the situation is here. What we have is incredible progress being made by the Iraqi people over the last 90 to 180 days.
Incredible progress.
Once the surge actually was doing what it was supposed to do by creating a safer, secure environment on the ground, we started getting the cooperation of the indigenous Iraqi people. They started feeding us intelligence and information that helped us and the Iraqi army do their job, the Iraqi security forces. We had Prime Minister Maliki actually ordering an operation on his own against the Sunni militias.
Using our troops.
Against the Shia militias.
Using our troops.
No, using his troops.
Right, and 1,000 of them refused to fight, and he needed our help. He couldn't do it on his own.
Mark, it was 1,000 out of 15,000. He had 14,000 troops that actually went in there and accepted their orders and fought against their fellow Shias.
Could they have done it without our help? No.
No, not yet.
Not even close.
Okay, and could we have won the Revolutionary War without France's help? No.
Is this, is this
not
what it
even
is?
Close.
Is this the Iraqi Revolutionary War?
No.
And we're France,
no.
And we're helping
what
provide
is,
democracy and freedom to Iraq. Is that
we
really
are,
what you expect?
We are providing democracy and freedom to Iraq.
Really?
What I'm saying
you think,
is,
you think 10 years from now Iraq will be this vision city on a hill in the Middle East and everyone?
No,
will
but
live
the United
free and,
the United States was not the vision of a city on a hill 10 years after we declared independence either. So
how much money and how many lives will it cost, in your view, until finally we get to this success as John McCain defines it?
I don't have any idea, but I know that you can't put an artificial cap on it. You have to invest what
One
needs
trillion,
to be done.
5 trillion, 10 trillion? Is there ever a limit? I mean, is there
no,
ever a chance
no,
where
no.
American needs come
no.
first
when,
before Iraqi needs?
When you're investing in freedom and security around the world, the
really?
Answer is no, there is not a limit.
Great.
There is no upper cap.
Oh, no upper cap. That's wonderful. So we can go in and stop the genocide in Darfur, right?
I would be perfectly happy to do that.
Me too, but all our troops are in Iraq.
Okay.
And we can go into Pakistan and stop Osama bin Laden there. We need more troops for that too, don't we?
Well, you know what? Pakistan's a whole different story. As you know, the military situation on the ground in Pakistan is such that you don't want to send a lot of troops in
there. There's a dictatorship
in
Burma. We need to stop that too, don't you think?
And I would be perfectly happy to do that, yes.
But we don't have enough troops
you know, you have
to
stop
all these dictatorships all around the world.
You prioritize and you prioritize.
I agree.
And right now the priority is Iraq.
Tell me why Iraq is a greater priority than Darfur.
Well, by definition, because we're there. We're already there. We need to finish the job, make sure that they become a peaceful, safe, secure country where they can exercise their freedoms, where they can exercise their right to vote, where they can have a democratically elected and stable government that will provide stability and as a stability magnet throughout the Middle East, a very dangerous place. We're already there. There's absolutely no point in pulling out now that we've got the job about 75% to 80% done.
75% to 80% done.
Let's stick around and finish
you know,
the job. Then we can go on to Afghanistan and make sure that things are finished there. And then if you want to go to Darfur, Mark, I'm with you. Let's go to Darfur.
Well, I'd like it, but we don't have enough troops, so we may have to have
We've just finished in Iraq, and now we can go to Darfur. I said that.
When we're done in Iraq,
which
I assume will be like Macbeth, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty place
you know
to
what?
The last They're, syllable recorded
not, not
time.
Only are they making military progress, they're making political progress.
You know,
you have
we've
an actual
heard this line before,
okay,
Mike.
They
3 months into the war, the president stood outside a big banner that said, mission accomplished. He didn't say we were 80% done. He said we were 100% done 3 months into
and
it.
And there you are mischaracterizing with that. That was
how am I mischaracterizing?
Because the mission that was accomplished was the assault and fall of Saddam Hussein. That was the mission.
That's not
that
what
was
the president said. He said the end of combat operations in Iraq.
Right.
He was wrong, and he was wrong
No, he wasn't wrong. He was right then.
We haven't had combat operations since 2003.
What Secretary Rumsfeld didn't do was to police after the war action very well, and he allowed the insurgency to start bubbling up. If we had done that right, Mark, major combat operations were over when the president declared that.
And then they started again. And then they were over again.
Right.
And then they started again. And then they were over again. Every 3 months, I could probably find you a quote from March 2003 today where the president said, we're making tremendous progress.
Hey,
Dick Cheney said they were in their last throes. That was back in 05,
I think. I've already said that Secretary Rumsfeld bungled after the major operations.
I don't remember saying it in 05 or 04 or 06.
And you know what? In addition to Secretary Cheney, probably Ambassador Bremer bungled his whole role. For 2 years, he was the guy in charge on the ground there, and he didn't do a very good job. But now we've got new people in charge, we've got a new plan, and you know what, Mark? It's working really, really well. The Iraqis are already finding a way to share their oil revenues, even if they can't get a...
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. The oil revenues are going all over the country to all factions. We don't have legislation yet, but they're actually sharing the money on the oil revenues.
The Sunnis seem to be complaining about it. But look,
No. It's the Sunni militias that are complaining about it. The Sunnis are getting their cut on this whole thing. We have a parliament that's actually starting to do its job. It's showing up to work every day. It's debating the issues of the day.
We've heard this before. We heard this before they took their 2-month vacation last August.
It's happening, Mark.
You can shuffle the deck chairs on the Titanic all you want. But the problem is that every single year we hear there's good news. And now the Republican plan is to say, oh, well, we were wrong in 03 and 04 and 05 and 06 and 07, but we're right now. Trust us. Okay, we said trust us in 03, you were wrong to trust us. We said trust us in 04, you were wrong to trust us. And 05 and 06 and 07. But now we know what we're doing. Here's Stephanopoulos' question. It depends on the Iraqis, doesn't it? At least admit that.
You used to be an independent guy, and now you're just like a clone of Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. The war is
They're
lost.
They're not tough enough. I'm not a clone
Americans,
of them.
America's troops have lost the war. America can't fight. America's military is bad.
It's not
this
our
is Harry
war.
Reid, you know?
It's not our war.
Mark,
the
we're,
Shia
we're not,
Sunni war.
We are,
I don't care
We're
going to
walk out of there winners.
I want to help build.
I can't believe you don't care who wins.
Between the Shia and the Sunni?
No,
between
no.
the Al-Qaeda-supported Sunni
between America
and the Iranian
between America
Shia?
And the terrorists. And you're just like Harry Reid. You're sitting there. The American troops can't fight a war. We're being beaten on the battlefield by these people.
The Democratic Party
needs a new message.
I have trouble knowing who the terrorists are because at first I thought
have trouble. They're the guys that are shooting at us.
Well, let's talk about that because at first they were Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And then we destroyed
Al-Qaeda.
Then it was Saddam Hussein. They were the terrorists. Then it was a new Sunni group, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now it's Iranian Shia militias.
Right.
But the Iranian Shia militias and the Al-Qaeda Sunni militias are fighting each other. So we're fighting the Iranian Shia with Al-Qaeda, and we're fighting Al-Qaeda with the Iranian Shia. They're fighting each other. Why do we have to get involved in that shootout?
Actually, that's not what we're involving ourselves in. What we're involving ourselves in is the areas where we need to make the people feel more safe and secure and to create...
Do they?
Yes, they do.
They
oh,
don't have as much...
Overwhelmingly.
Are they? Are the Iraqi people better off than they were under Saddam Hussein?
Okay, yes, much better.
They don't have the electricity. They don't have the food.
You know
their economy's in shambles.
Okay.
They have more unemployment. How are they better off?
Okay, if Iraq is not improving dramatically... Why is it that a major, I forget his name, I wish I had it, a major donor to the Democratic Party, a guy who's a Democratic activist, wants to invest $500 million building an amusement park in Baghdad now because he thinks the people can appreciate it and he's going to risk $500 million of his own money in Baghdad?
I think it's,
tell me things aren't getting better, Mark.
I think it's sad when you have to cite an amusement
$500 million of investment.
Evidence of why we should spend another $1 trillion and another 4,000 American lives in Iraq.
I will say this. I would like to see us get more of the oil revenues to defer the cost of reconstruction. I will agree with you there.
Well, at least. The GAO, the General Accounting Office, has just put forward a report. And the title of the report says it all. The title of the report is, "The United States lacks comprehensive plan to destroy the terrorist threat and close the safe haven in Pakistan's federally administered tribal areas. There are vast unpoliced regions," the report says,
right,
"attractive to extremists and terrorists seeking a safe haven."
Right.
Now look, in 2001, there was this safe haven called Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden and his minions plotted attacks against the United States. Today, after spending 4,000 American lives and trillions of dollars, mostly in Iraq, some in Afghanistan, what do we have? We have Osama bin Laden and his minions in a safe haven planning attacks against the United States. Why was it right to spend all that money again?
Okay. What we're not going to do is we're not going to invade Pakistan because they have a very strong Islamic fundamentalist crazy wing.
So we've lost.
No. We haven't.
They might as well
yet.
Send the troops home and have them rebuild New Orleans. If we can't beat them and they get to live in a safe haven forever,
as long as my
President Obama has said he would be willing to go after them in Pakistan.
And you know what?
Go after the terrorists where they live.
And what your President Obama is going to do is he's going to give the fundies the chance to take over the government and they'll have the nuclear bomb and it's going to be a much less safe world if President Obama does it. Look, this is a guy who says, I'll sit down and talk with Korea with no preconditions.
Our time is up, Mike.
You just admitted defeat.
We are back where we were 8 years
ago. We're going to win the war.
If you enjoyed the Inside Scoop, let us know by posting a comment on RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine.